What's going on, everybody? Bruce here from the Smart Pizza Marketing Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in with me for another episode of the podcast here. Mikey Saburo from Mikey's Late Night Slice is joining me on the podcast. Today, we're talking about what it's like to run multiple locations, what he wished he knew when he first started, how to take care of yourself when you do get busy in the restaurant pizza space and you know there's a lot going on. But sometimes it's important to check out, and how do you actually do that? And we also touch on a little bit of building your team, which is super important and difficult all at the same time right now. I think you're going to enjoy this episode of the podcast with Mikey Saburo. So get ready to take some notes. You may want to listen to this one twice. It's a great episode, tons of great information. Hope you enjoy it. All right, so if you follow me on Instagram, you can follow me at Smart Pizza Marketing or at The Bruce Irving. I kind of teased about me skipping the Pizza Expo this year. And here's my reasonings. The Expo was supposed to or usually happens in March. Then it got pushed back to June. Then it got pushed back to August. And to be honest with you, I live in Boston. And it's really, really nice here from May until October. And with all the pushback and all the uncertainty about what's going to happen, you know, I didn't really feel comfortable booking tickets or a hotel to Las Vegas with the uncertainty of if it's actually going to happen. You know, it's been canceled like a dozen times. And every time it's canceled, the Pizza Expo people say it's happening right up until it doesn't happen. And it's kind of annoying. You know, I'm going to be honest with you. You know, I like the Pizza Expo and I like going, but be honest, you can't tell us it's happening all the time and then it not happening. And I know it's out of their control. And I know that it didn't have anything to do with them. They were just going by what was happening in the state or in the country at the time. So I didn't book any tickets because, you know, we went through this story before. I think it was supposed to happen at least six other times and it never happened. So I wasn't certain it was going to happen. So I didn't book any tickets. Now it's happening in August. And after talking to a lot of people, I get the opportunity to talk to either on the podcast or people who listen to the podcast. The overwhelming majority of people, and I know you see the same people who are going on Instagram and Facebook, that, you know, I put some posts out there and a lot of people said that they were going, but those are all people who will go every single year regardless. And I love those people. And there are a lot of people who live on the West Coast, but us East Coasters, it's a far trip and it's in the middle of summer. And after talking to people who listen to the podcast and businesses like Forza Forney, who's a sponsor of the podcast, they're not going this year. They're skipping. It's a busy time for people. And I don't want to go in the middle of August to Las Vegas for half a show. I just don't want to do it. So this year, I am deciding to skip the Pizza Expo in Las Vegas. I'm a little sad about it, but on, you know, after what's happened the last year and a half, I've met a lot of people. I get the opportunity to talk to a lot of people here on the podcast every single week. So I don't feel like I'm missing a whole lot. I do miss hanging out with people and doing our show at the Forza Forney booth and doing these podcast lives. But I don't know if I would necessarily be able to do that anyway. So it's sad, but I am skipping the Pizza Expo this year. And I think after looking in talking, there are a lot of companies who are doing Expo different. So hopefully it comes back in full force. I don't know what the Expos are going to look like moving forward in the future. Maybe this year will tell us how it goes because it's in a different time. It's in a different environment than it usually is. And we'll see what this one looks like. So I'm taking a backseat for this one. I'm sitting out, but we'll be back hopefully in full force in March if it happens again, back at the Forza Forney booth, doing our interviews, hanging out, seeing you all at the Pizza Expo in 2022. But 2021, I'm out. Let me know if you're going. Email me. I've already heard from a ton of you. Message me on Instagram at Smart Pizza Marketing or at The Bruce Irving, and let me know if you're headed to the Pizza Expo or not. So far, the vast majority of people on the East Coast are not going, and everybody who so far who said they are going to me live West Coast. And it's an easy trip for you West Coasters. It's in Las Vegas. It's not too far. You can either drive or a quick flight. But for us East Coasters, it's quite a trip. And it's in the middle of summer. And I don't want to leave here in summer when it's nice to go somewhere where it's nice as well. But it's nice here. I get to enjoy my life here. All right. Today's episode is brought to you by MailShark and Stanislaw. So I'm going to take a quick break, thank our sponsors, and we'll be right back on the other side with the podcast with Mikey Saburo from Mikey's Late Night Slice. If you're looking to market your pizzeria in 2021, you have to contact MailShark. It's got to be your direct mail go-to company. Whether you want to get your menu in the hands of new customers or promote your pizza shop with a postcard, magnet, or one of the hottest direct mail pieces, they have these plastic postcards. MailShark will work with you to come up with the best marketing plan that fits your budget, and that's very important in 2021. MailShark gives pizzerias the ability to spread those mailings and payments out over a weekly schedule. So it doesn't have to be all upfront money. It helps you out, lets you work with them to put those content pieces out and pay for it as you go. Thousands of pizzerias trust MailShark with their direct mail and printing marketing. They are the best in the industry. Give them a call today, 610-621-5116, or you can visit them at themailshark.com/SPM to find out how they can help your pizza shop. They have so many options available. Again, 610-621-5116 or themailshark.com/SPM. If you're looking for consistent quality and superior fresh tomato flavor, check out Stanislaus Food Products. Real Italian values guide this family-owned company. Values like work hard, never cut corners, always do your best, and keep your word. They know consistent flavor and quality is crucial to great food. That's why they work so hard to provide you with the freshest tomato flavor can after can. You can follow them on Instagram at Stanislaus Tomatoes for weekly business building ideas from other successful pizzerias. And I have to say, over the past few months, I've been using Stanislaus products in my pizzas that you see over on Instagram that I'm making at home, and I'm very happy with the results. I love this food product, and I'm very picky about who we suggest you use here on the podcast. So if you hear them on the podcast, you know I endorse them, I use them, I enjoy them. So if you're listening to this, go check them out on Instagram at Stanislaus Tomatoes. You will not regret it. By the way, if you're looking to learn and talk with other entrepreneurs, maybe you can't go to the Pizza Expo this year, our mastermind group is a perfect place for that. We're doing our TikTok challenge inside of the mastermind group now. We're doing an email marketing challenge next. We're going to show you the ins and outs of TikTok, of Instagram, of Facebook marketing, of Facebook bots, of email marketing. We're working all of that inside of the mastermind group. Plus, you get access to a private Facebook page and two monthly calls with me and other entrepreneurs who are doing some cool things in the pizza industry, learning, growing, marketing their businesses every single month. If you want information on how to join, smartpizzamarketing.com/mastermind. Mikey from Mikey's Late Night Slice, always a great conversation, always tons of knowledge, and you know, just a great guy to learn from and implement things that he's doing, because he's very creative and he very much thinks out of the box, and I enjoy that. So I enjoyed this episode with Mikey. I think you will too. Let's get into it. All right, welcome back. One of my good friends the pizza industry, Mike from Mikey's Late Night Slice, is joining us. Mikey, I know you're busy. Thank you so much for hanging out with us here.
Hey, I wouldn't miss this for the world, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate being on.
I always tell people, if you want to have a cool vibe of a restaurant, go check out Mikey's Late Night Slice. I do think you do an amazing job of bringing your personality and what you like into the vibe of your business. So congratulations and good
thank
job
you.
On that.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So tell everybody, if they're not familiar with who you are, I know you've been on the podcast sometimes, but just give us a little bit of background about like what you do and where you do it.
Yep. So my name is Mikey Saboro. As Bruce said, I own Mikey's Late Night Slice, founded it back in 2009. We're a predominantly pizza by the slice restaurant out of Columbus, Ohio. We started off as a shack at a 140 square foot shack. And, up to this point, we got about 8 locations, in and around the Ohio area, Ohio, Cincinnati, Columbus. So, yeah, it's been a really fun ride, and, you know, I'm glad to be here and can't wait to, talk and hear some questions.
You're one of the OGs in the Columbus pizza scene.
You know, actually I wouldn't consider myself one of the OGs, because there are like, you know, like any city, there is the guys that have been there since the, you know, 50s or so. But, you know, we were one of the OGs as far as a food truck. You know, one of the first things we did in 2009 is get a food truck.
Yeah.
And that was kind of before there was a food truck scene going on. And we didn't even know there was a food truck scene. We just wanted something on wheels that we could take to the festivals. So, you know, we got in before it was a thing. So I'll certainly give you that.
You know who I talked to? Spencer Saylor from Wizard's Eye. I saw you recently stopped in there for his pizza shop.
Yep.
Yeah. He just opened a pizza shop, which is kind of a different kind of style of pizza. We talked about like you have to order way ahead of time. There's no like storefront, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, Spencer's got a really cool thing going on. it's really cool to see what he's been able to do with pizza and in our market. It's in the market of Central Ohio, Columbus. It's you know, we kind of have a pizza city going on here. Yeah. And he's carved out a hell of a niche for himself in a number of really cool and unique and creative ways. So yeah, I'd imagine his talk was awesome.
So you are, what's it like in Columbus right now? Is it opening back up? Like, what percentage are you at? How's it looking COVID wise?
I think about this line all the time from Animal House, where they're all sitting on the couch and they're like, "War is over, man. We're about to drop the big one." And that's what I keep thinking. That's what it feels like. War is over, man. That's kind of like what's going on in Columbus right now. It just seems like we're done. You know, the governor here decided that June 2nd was going to be the day that, you know, we stopped, you know, with all the, you know, regulations and restrictions and everything. But as soon as he said that, the state went and the CDC went without masks. And so they've had to backtrack. So I would say this last week up to this point has been pretty much, it's kind of been lawless. The city of Columbus still has a little bit of a mask mandate going on right now, but it's, you know, depending on what store you go into or in what restaurant you go into, sometimes everybody's in a mask and sometimes nobody's in a mask. So we're right on that cusp of people starting to not really want to wear masks anymore.
I know, right? I think so. For here, I'm in Boston. So May 29th, which is Saturday, the mask mandate for us comes out off for everything, and we're at 100% capacity. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think we have, so the Boston Celtics are in the playoffs, and the Garden goes from 25% capacity, I think, for last night's game, and then Sunday's game is 100% capacity or 75 or something like that. So it's going to be interesting to see, like, how quick people go from, like, don't come near me to, like, all right, let's get right next to each other.
Yeah. You know what I could say on that too is, you know, I was out in the, you know, our busy business district, it's called the Short North, Saturday night. And I was out way later than I'm usually out. You can probably see my hair. I don't spend too much time, you know, hanging out on the weekends at 1 a.m. anymore, but it was, our bars and restaurants were packed to the gills, people pouring into the streets. I have never seen it like that. I'd literally never seen it like that. So if nothing else, you know, the bars, restaurants, clubs are really starting to get back, at least on the weekends, to, God, not even full capacity, but over.
Yeah. And it's good. It's good to see. It's good to finally see that. I know your restaurants, like your pizza, you're in the pizza scene, but you're like, I've been to your restaurants and they're very much an experience of themselves. Like, you want people to come in, you have a speakeasy in one of your restaurants. So it's like, you want to be able to have people come into your restaurant and hang out. That's the vibe you get. So I'm sure you're glad to see, like, this over now and, like, all right, let's get back to doing business as usual.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And yeah, you nailed it. Our, you know, we were lucky that we were in the pizza category.
Yeah.
The pandemic hit, but we fared much more like a restaurant, like any normal sit down restaurant, than we did say like a, you know, a pizza shop that's already doing 90% carry out pre-COVID. So yeah, we got hit harder than I think most pizza did, but, you know, we were also luckily still doing pizza, and we were able to pivot to, you know, majority delivery really quickly.
Did you do delivery before this COVID thing happened?
Yeah, we did, but it was, you know, it was under 20, I would say 15% of total sales. It was probably like 12, to be honest, if you take it, you know, all the locations combined, and it shot up to, you know, 35-40%, 50% for a couple of weeks. And then it's trickled back down and we're hovering right around mid 20s. Right now, I think, you know, if you put everything together.
Yeah.
So we're certainly seeing it, you know, get down to where it's manageable.
Right. Did you do your own delivery drivers, or did you use a third party?
No, we used all third party. We've never actually done our own delivery in 12 years. We've never done our own delivery. So, but what we did do is we adopted the third party system across all available channels. So, I mean, there was at one point, you know, we were that restaurant that had 13 iPads back behind the thing, and we pared that down to like 4 and then to 6 and then back down to 3. So I think we're at the, you know, big 3, maybe 4 with a catering thing there right now. But we picked the 3 we like, and they're probably 3 the biggest, and we just went with that.
Did you, so was it like DoorDash, Grubhub, Uber Eats, those people?
Exactly. Yep.
And they do your deliveries.
Yep.
Yeah. So a lot of people, like, I don't know, I talk to so many people and there's so many different experiences and views on a third party. Like it's very much like, it's almost like politics, right? Like some people hate it and some people like it.
Yeah. I don't think anybody likes it.
That's true.
I think people either deal with it because it's a necessary evil and hate it, or they hate it and not deal with it because they have either had their own system previous or whatever. But you know, that's one thing I think we're starting to see now with third party is a little bit of the lawlessness of it starting to come into check a little bit with the consolidation of the companies. You know, 2 years ago, there was, you know, like I said, there was 11 companies trying to, you know, do third party delivery. Now it's kind of consolidated to maybe three, maybe five, if you include some of the smaller ones or even some of the local ones that you might have. And they're starting to compete a little bit on percentage and price. So I think maybe DoorDash just came out with an ad that I saw maybe through an email that said something about like 15% across the board, which, you know, we haven't really been able to see a lot of the big guys go below 20 lately. So it's nice to see a little bit of competitiveness on price.
Yeah.
Your third party. And I think that'll keep getting down over the next couple of years.
I was talking to Mike Bausch, who owns Andolini's Pizza, which I'm sure I'm sure you've heard of Mike. He speaks at the Pizza Expo and is in Pizza Today magazine. And he uses the DoorDash, just the DoorDash delivery. And I think he said he pays like $7 a delivery for a fee, a flat fee for the delivery drive, which I mean, like if you can get it to that point, I think it's kind of doable because you could pass half on to the customer. And then the other half that you would have to pay a delivery driver anyway, but then you get to not have to hire delivery drivers or manage that, and you can kind of throttle it when you need it.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there anything that you did or changed in business during COVID that you didn't do before COVID, but you're going to keep after?
Yeah, tons of stuff, man. I mean, that was our whole theme during COVID is like, how are we going to grow out of this? You know, I mean, like we knew we'd be here at this point. You know, we knew we'd be here. We didn't know what we were going to look like, but as an outfit, we knew we were going to be here. So our goal, you know, our theme during COVID, we had one, and it was a big flag that said, don't give up the ship. And that was our motto throughout the entire thing. And by not doing that, it was like, we weren't going to give up what we had built up to this point. So, you know, how can we innovate our way out of this? How can we grow? You know, what things can we add? And we didn't go too crazy. We didn't turn our pizza shops into like convenience stores or anything,
right?
You know, by selling, you know, aspirin bottles and rolls of toilet paper or anything. But what we did do is we did introduce, you know, ghost concepts and some other, you know, what would traditionally be called like an LTO, but we just decided like we have this capacity in our kitchen. Why not experiment with some stuff that's going to get people interested in? I do think we started chicken wings at the worst possible time that you could start chicken wings. It was like end of January, like right before the Super Bowl. And they were just like, this is the worst time to do chicken wings. It's still the worst time to do chicken wings. It's probably even worse than when we started. But we did a whole chicken program that, I mean, shot up to like, you know, 15% of sales. I would say the things that weren't on our menu pre-COVID account for about 15% of our entire company-wide sales at this point. And to answer your question, I do not see that changing post-COVID at all because, you know, people are used to things now. They're used to a couple more items that, you know, they're going to get third party. People love to push buttons and get food, and they will push more buttons when they don't have to talk to somebody as we've seen. So a lot of this stuff, the ghost concepts, the just increased menu items through third party and in shop, those will absolutely stick with us because they're revenue drivers.
Now explain to someone what a ghost kitchen is if they're not familiar with that.
Yeah. So a ghost kitchen is essentially another concept that you operate out of your own kitchen. So it doesn't have to be the same food that you use. It just has to use, you know, essentially your own kitchen space. And it can be an entire another concept that only exists on third-party delivery platforms or in carryout. So the one we did is we're, you know, 90% pizza. We decided that we're going to try a vegan pizza concept. And most vegan pizza concepts are, I think, tend to hover around the gourmet side of pizza, where late night slice really hovers around the pizza by the slice, kind of after the bars close, you know, drunk foldable slamming pizza. So we wanted to do vegan slamming pizza. and vegan street pizza, like we called it. So we went and searched out this entire ingredient base with a lot of new proteins that we're starting to see come on the market right now, but 6 months ago were really new on the market. Like, they weren't even making these things in bulk yet. We were just getting sample after sample,
right,
and putting them out as fast as they could make them. But, you know, a vegan thick pepperoni slice, a vegan sausage, a vegan, a really good vegan cheese, and some other vegan proteins. And we just made an entire vegan concept that was made with, you know, the amount of ingredients that we could use. Our dough is vegan, our sauce is vegan, and then these other vegan proteins and cheeses. And we created this whole other concept to serve the vegan market. And that concept is doing great. It's doing, you know, thousands of dollars out of the kitchens that it's in right now. So it's taking up space. It's taking up capacity that was lessened during COVID, that we had the lights on for, we had the ovens on for, we had people there working. So they're just using that unused capacity to put out more product.
Is it under the Mikey's Late Night Slice name, or is it a completely different name?
This one's completely different. And we originally kind of hid from that. You know, I mean, that's the thing with ghost kitchens. And I don't think the jury is really out on it yet to whether you totally adopt that this is your other brand, or you try to keep it away from your other brand. It kind of depends on, you know, your main brand. Do you want to put another brand out there and, you know, risk diluting? Do you want to take the reputation that you have, good or bad, and, you know, apply that to another concept? Or do you just want to let it grow, stand, and then possibly walk and run on its own? So we let this thing walk, run, and stand on its own before we decided, you know, that we were going to really announce publicly that it's us. And people find out,
right?
You know, I mean, if you do a reverse address check, you know, it's pretty obvious to know what door this is coming out of.
Right, right.
But so people find out, and we don't hide from it if they ask. But we let it try to stand on its own before we, you know, just went out and say, hey, this is our brand. We're doing something different.
Yeah, I think the benefit of that too is if it doesn't work, you can just kind of get rid of it, right?
Yeah, exactly. And we did that with one of our ghost brands. You know, we just took it out back and shot it just because it wasn't that great of an idea.
Right.
And we had all those iPads already ready, you know, and so we just switched them over to another ghost brand that we were thinking about, and it's doing its own thing.
Yeah. Plus, like, you know, sometimes people add something onto the menu, or they have something on their menu and they don't want to get rid of it because that one person always orders it and they're going to complain. This, when it's like, when it's not your name attached to it and they don't know it's Mikey's Late Night Slice, they just think it's this other brand. You'd be like, you know what? We're done with it. We're not doing it anymore. And you don't get the questions from that.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll give you a really good example of what we did. So we had two ghost brands. One was the vegan pizza, and this other one we thought of was a stuffed slice. It was essentially 1/4 of an 18-inch cheese pizza. And then you just picked unlimited toppings. And we would just fold this thing up into like kind of like a taco, a triangular taco.
Yeah, yeah.
Screw it. And then, you know, run it through the oven one more time. So it was just this big stuffed slice. We called it Fat Slice. And Fat Slice was great, except it didn't sell. So what we did is we took Fat Slice and we made that in a Late Night Slice menu item, killed it on a third party, or killed it as a ghost brand, brought it into the Late Night Slice menu as an LTO. And then we took that iPad and basically the space of that ghost kitchen, and we turned it into a late night wing thing, because we already had wings going on. And so we made the wing thing its own thing to stand on its own. So it's kind of like Late Night Wings runs alongside High Horse Vegan Pizza and Late Night Slice as another ghost brand. And if that doesn't work, we'll take it off and try something new, because we have, you know, it's essentially just changing your pictures,
right,
and your logo and everything.
It's a good testing ground too. I mean, maybe you want to add something to your menu, but you're like, I don't want to add it if it's not going to sell. It's a good way to test an item out if people actually want it or not.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You know, there's a lot of people I don't think there's a lot of people who do that, but I think vegan pizza, you know, I was just talking to Alex from Purgatory, who's opening a new vegan pizzeria, Hot Tongue Pizza in Los Angeles. And I feel like vegan right now is what gluten-free was 10 years ago. Like, gluten-free 10 years ago was kind of just coming on the scene. People had it, but they didn't have they just had it to have it. It wasn't like they were doing it well. Like, I feel like vegans at that point, like, a lot of people may have a vegan pizza, but it's not, it's just a vegan pizza to say you have a vegan pizza. It's not like they've done a good job of making a good vegan pizza. So hopefully that'll change.
Yeah, absolutely. Most vegan pizza previous to, I think, a real big vegan pizza push, which we've seen in the last 6 months to a year, was just a veggie pizza.
Yeah, no cheese, right?
Without cheese, yeah. You know, that's depending on, you know, obviously if you want cheese, it's going to be vegetarian, or if you find a vegan cheese. But, you know, with all these vegan proteins, you can really achieve something that is similar to the pizzas that, you know, we all have previously been putting out. So I think there's a lot more opportunity to do a traditional pizza that happens to be vegan and not just a vegan pizza right. in its usual form.
Plus you're early too. If you can come up with a really good vegan pizza that tastes good, you're early to the game. So that'll help you stand out right there.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if you're from a smaller market and the vegan community is underserved, there is, you know, a certain amount of your population that is vegan that is dying for a piece of vegan pepperoni pizza.
Yeah.
And they will order it.
Yep. My daughter's vegan and she like you said, if we ever get pizza, she does what you just said. They just, you know, gets a pizza with no cheese and vegetables, and that's her style of vegan pizza, which is good. Like if you have a good dough and some good sauce and some veggies on there, it's still good, but there's nothing like a regular cheese slice. If you can figure out how to do that vegan, I think you'll have a lot of customers out there for sure.
Did I tell you what, for those of you wanting to try something vegan, you can even go to, you know, grocery store and find vegan chicken, those chicken slices, they're Gardein or, you know, one of the vegan chicken, you know, they're like fajita slices of vegan chicken. And you do a vegan buffalo chicken pizza and sit back and watch that thing sell almost as good as one of your two or three tier pizzas. Really? I almost guarantee it. If you're in a decent middle market or even a high market, like our vegan buffalo chicken skyrocketed to like our number two seller in the company when we introduced it. Because that flavor profile just isn't available to the vegan community and they're dying for it.
Yeah. That's interesting. I'm going to go look that up. I'm going to go try to do that. So Alex from Purgatory gave me like a vegan cheese recipe. I'm going to test it out. I'm going to test it out maybe next week at home and see how I can do it. He says it comes out really good. He uses pecans and he comes up with this really good vegan cheese. It looks good on Instagram, but you know how that goes. Some shit looks good on Instagram, but isn't really good in real life.
Yep. And if you don't want to grind almonds, you know, there are so many good vegan cheeses out there now that you can get in, you know, a 5-pound bag shreds just like you would your normal cheese. Stuff's out there.
How many locations are you guys up to now?
We're up to 8 right now. And that's if we're at full blast. You know, actually we're at a couple more when we got the concert venues going. We're about to open another concert venue down in Cincinnati a little later on in the summer here. So when we have concerts going, we have the food truck out and we have all the locations humming, you know, we're right around that eight to nine number. But generally, you know, the concert venues are shut down right now. So that takes out 3. So we kind of ebb and flow a little bit depending on what pandemic is shutting down, what venues.
Right. Did you grow up as an entrepreneur or like, what were you like as a kid?
I wouldn't say I grew up as an entrepreneur. I certainly didn't come from like an entrepreneurial family.
Yeah.
I just always had ideas. I mean, I had ideas and, you know, I kind of grew up in a pretty, you know, good house that I was able to explore some of that stuff. And I guess it just, the traditional way of doing things, you know, I remember being in college and I did not finish college. I remember being, I think right around my sophomore year and just being in this giant, giant hall. And there was a math, you know, lecture going on and I couldn't understand the professor because he was, you know, really far away and his mic was, and I was like, this isn't working. There's a better way to do things. And, that's when I pretty much dropped out of school right around, I don't know, 2000 and decided that I'm going to just try stuff on my own until something that works. I mean, the pizza thing was just an experiment. I was driving pedicabs at the time. I had a fleet of like 5 bike taxis.
Yeah.
And I kept hearing from people on the back of the pedicab, like at 3 a.m. or 2:30 a.m. when you're driving them home from the bar, you know, where's the pizza by the slice in this city? And that's, you know, pretty much where it came from. So it was an experiment. Like I said, we opened up in 140 square foot shack and, you know, we got a line in the first couple of weeks and I was like, ah, cool. We got a line. We're onto something,
right.
You know, but, I certainly didn't spend, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars on this experiment. It just happened to be, you know, pizza by the slice, which, you know, I certainly didn't invent, but
yeah, but you know, you execute. Like a lot of people have ideas and a lot of people have a lot of ideas. The problem is they don't execute on those ideas or they don't follow through. One thing I've learned from you is that you do come up with these ideas. You execute quickly. Like, how do you do that? How do you just decide and you're like, we're going to decide to do this and you just run with it and see where it goes.
Yeah. You know, and that's one thing I can say we've taken away from our experience with COVID here is that, you know, when you have a really good team, it makes making fast decisions a lot easier. And I think that's one thing we did really well during COVID is we, you know, we came up with a plan and we acted really quickly on it. Whether it was, you know, shutting the company down like we had to do, or at least putting it to sleep for a little while.
Right.
Or, you know, not following the rules of the PPP money we got and knowing that that would be the lifesaver it was, and not following the rules that were really ambiguous. We were able to act really fast. And I think that, you know, has been something that's proven to be really helpful for us, you know, over times of trouble and, you know, times of prosperity too. It's, you know, sometimes when you have an idea, just doing it faster than slower is, you know, you're going to make mistakes along the way, of course, you know, that's inevitable, but, you know, getting in and getting dirty and doing it quick, you figure those problems out faster. And, you know, it's not too hard to get help with things these days, whether it's YouTube or, you know, podcasts like yours. You know, it's easy to get help and to figure out what other people are doing around. And, you know, it's if you're the least bit savvy, you know, it's not that hard.
Yeah. And I think you're not like, you gotta be not that you want to fail, because nobody wants to fail, but you have to be not afraid of it. I think too many people are afraid to fail and they don't do something versus trying it out and obviously not wanting to fail. But if you do, if it doesn't succeed, you know, it's okay. You're going to live to see another day.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's, you know, it's failure to launch, it's failure to start, and it's, you know, failure to be afraid of failing. You know, I think a lot of it is just, you know, you got an idea and you automatically think like, I got family to deal with. Yeah. I got another stuff. I got, you know, I got emails to look through, and it's like, I'll just put that on the back burner. And, I think that's the hardest problem to get over. I mean, I'm one of the most susceptible people to having an idea and just letting it linger and then letting it maybe phase out, just because it's just so damn hard to take those first few steps.
Yeah, it is for sure. I can tell you that for sure. My experience as well. You talked about your team a little bit. How did you assemble your team, and is it hard now? I know that everybody around the country keeps emailing me and talking to me about how hard it is to kind of find employees and build a good team up. You seem to have a good management structure team. Is it still hard for you, or how did you put those people together?
Yeah, you know, luckily we didn't lose a lot of management during COVID, but I'll kind of, you know, start at the beginning. You know, when COVID hit it, and I'm sure this is a similar story to what a lot of people have, it was kind of an opportunity for us. And this hurts. It was very, very painful at the time, but we were a very fat and happy company pre-COVID. And what COVID did is it forced us to, you know, look at areas of inefficiency and areas that we didn't even know were inefficient until way later, until we had hindsight to look back on. You know, we were just, for the size of company that we were really heavy as far as our executive team goes. And we had to make some really, really painful decisions about, you know, letting a lot of people go. And then after 6 to 8 months of, you know, focusing on just this core executive team and our management, you know, we realized that we were getting all that work done that we were doing with 50% more people, and we still weren't busting our asses working 90 hours a week. You know, we were still on, you know, we were still getting the job done. So it really taught us through force practically that, you know, we could do a lot more with a smaller team. So that was kind of our experience through COVID. Post COVID, I think we're sharing the exact same problems that almost everybody is sharing right now. Shortage of chicken wings. the problem that we're having is just, you know, it's hard to get, you know, people that want to, you know, get back into the restaurants.
Yeah.
And, I think that'll even out. And I think we're starting to see that, you know, the 2 weeks ago when our governor here announced that the extra money that they were paying towards unemployment would be ending soon. That weekend, the next weekend, 2 days after that, was the biggest jump in applications that we've seen in, you know, a year. So, you know, those things are starting to remedy themselves, I feel. And I think by this time next year, this time in 6 months, you know, I don't think we're going to be in the same spot. I think it'll stabilize. Hopefully it'll stabilize quite a bit, but we've had to make hard decisions. You know, we're closed for lunches right now. That was we were just talking about that this morning. Like, do we stay closed for lunches? That was a hard decision, but, you know, other than my argument of, I want to be open for lunch, you know, the numbers just weren't backing it up. There just weren't enough people. So, you know, we decided to kick this can down the road another 30 days and really focus all that human energy into the times that we needed the most, which is, you know, 4 to 3 a.m.
Yeah.
4 p.m. to 3 a.m. And just let lunches kind of linger for a second.
I always wonder why people like, you know, even me when I was in operating, it was like, all right, you always tried to get the times that weren't busy, busier versus why not just double down on the times that are already busy, right? Like it's that whole concept of fish when the fish are biting. Like we always try to fish when the fish aren't biting. Why not, if you're already busy at dinner time, why not try to, obviously people are out ordering pizza then, let's just double down then, forget about wasting money on the times that aren't busy.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, when you look at the numbers, and when we had to sit down and like look at the numbers that we were doing, you know, Monday through Thursday at lunch, you know, my only argument is like, well, I want to be open for lunch.
Right.
You know, that was my only argument, but it doesn't make dollars and it didn't make sense. So yeah, we're just going to, you know, pass it off for a little while and see if it comes back in a month or two or a year, we'll see.
Yeah. They always say the numbers don't lie, right?
Exactly.
They are what they are. How often do you meet with your management team to kind of go over those kind of decisions?
So we have a weekly executive meeting that we sit around, we go over the scorecard for the entire last week. We go over, you know, basically every metric that we have in the company and just make sure that week is, you know, trending well and it was meeting our expectations and everything. And then we did a management meeting, you know, with our GMs weekly. Right now we're on every other week just because we were really wanting them to just focus on stabilizing their shops and, you know, just being where we need them to be.
Right.
And to be honest, over COVID, we just didn't have a ton to update them on because we were, you know, more in survival mode than in growth mode. So it was just easy to, let's do this every 2 weeks and we may change that, we may not. But yeah, I would say weekly we meet as an executive team every week and then once every 2 weeks with the management.
Well, that's interesting. If you're watching this live and you have any questions too, there's like a little Q&A box on the bottom. If you have any questions for Mikey about what he does or what he's doing, drop them in there. I'll get to them as we move through the conversation here. But that's interesting. I think people always kind of look at people who have multiple restaurants. And if you're a single unit operator, they're always like, oh man, how do they do that? How do they get to 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 locations? I can barely manage the one that I have. How does somebody get to 2, 3, or 4? You know, yeah. Did you have that same thought when you had one, or were you always like, you know what, we're going to grow and that's going to be, we're just going to figure it out?
You know, it was something kind of in between. You know, if I look back on the years of growth, I wish I would have had a plan in the beginning that, you know, would have been something like, all right, we're going to grow this to 15 units in 5 years. And that's the plan from the get. But I didn't have that. So we just started seeing some lines. And then it was like, all right, this is working. Let's get a food truck. And then we took over a couple bar kitchens. And so our growth was very aimless. And I think that cost us a lot. And that's something I would, you know, recommend to people that want to grow. I think there's a few things, you know, that you need to be very, very assured before you add that second location. And, you know, we can get into those if you want to, but yeah. When we did it, it was blind, stumbling, falling, crawling growth that we just happened to, I think, being a really forgiving, you know, a couple of things I think worked out for us. One, we were in pizza. We were in the world's favorite food.
Right.
And then we added booze to it, the world's other favorite thing. So we were in the world's two favorite things, pizza and booze. So as long as you're not really messing that up too much, you know, it's hard. And we always thought that, you know, what can we do beyond pizza and booze to make it fun, to make it engaging, to make it an experience to go through? And again, I'm kind of veering off into the experience of late night slice now, but you know, that was always one of our things. You're like, anybody can do pizza, you know, who gives a whatever,
right?
It's what we do around our pizza. It's our marketing, it's our experience of going, it's our flavor profile, it's our menus, it's our digital presence, it's all that. It's that stuff that create the brand that people want to come back to. And not to mention that kind of creates a you know, something in your community that people can really latch onto, you know, a destination within the community.
They know you for something.
We're known for something other than the world's most favorite thing, which, you know, how many pizza places do you have in your community?
There's a ton.
Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds.
Yeah, exactly. So if you could name a couple of things that you wish you would have done differently, or if you could go back in time and be like, all right, I wish when I was growing, I did these couple things. Like, what were those few things?
Yeah. So as far as like knowing when to grow, you know, I'll kind of start there. Like, you know, when I always said, and people ask me that, like, when do I know it's time to add that second location? For one, I tell them this, there is absolutely nothing wrong with having one location and blowing that thing out of the water and taking a couple hundred thousand dollars out of that location and having one location that spins you off, like I said, enough to live on, enough to raise family, enough to have a nice house and a couple cars.
Yep.
And there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. In fact, we could have a whole podcast on not growing, you know, and not adding, you know, multi-unit, because there is a huge argument for that. But I would say if you can, you know, if you can walk away from your if you want to add a second one and you can go on a 2-week vacation and not only get, you know, the only call you may get is the call to update you on how everything's going, and you're not getting a call on, you know, something's on fire, what do I do? Something's not working, what do I do? Something, you know, this issue popped up, what do I do? If you can get away from your location, whatever it is, and you can't get one call, that means you put in the work that you're no longer needed in that location. You have management that's doing the right thing. You have your processes documented and completed, and that location is spinning and you don't need to be there anymore. If you're still working in that location, adding a second or a third location when you're vital to the operation is absolutely the recipe for disaster. It just is. And how many people within my, you know, distance of my voice can share a story about, you know, growing too quickly or just growing when they weren't ready? So, you know, there is so much work to be done. What I wish I would have done before I grew. And of course I'm speaking from, you know, 12 years of hindsight right now, which is a wonderful place to be in. Right. I wish I would have, you know, known that fact sooner, because I would have spent a lot more time documenting systems processes before I decided that growth was where I wanted to put my energy. I think we'd be, you know, as a company, we would have got to the place of this many locations way sooner than we are today. You know, we spend a lot of time fixing problems, you know, and fixing problems takes years, and going over and doing things over again. And, you know, when an operation is already moving and you're trying to adjust it, it's a lot harder than starting off in the right way from the rip. So that's one thing I wish I would have done a little bit sooner than I did, is just document everything. And just the second thing is put better people in place. You know, if you have a growth, if you have a concept that you think can be a growth concept, you know, getting somebody that has experience in growth concepts sooner than later, and not continually promoting from within, which we had great experience promoting from within. I would never say that promoting from within is a bad thing, but at some point you need to bring in some outside help so they can bring in new perspectives and new ways to do things. And so I wish I would have done that a little bit sooner too. And we're still struggling with bringing in, you know, I think the right people for where we want to be.
Yeah. I think that's the good two great examples. Anthony from Auto Pizza, who I just talked to before this one, said the same thing. He has 13 locations here in the New England area. And he said the exact same thing. He's like, I wish that I went back and just documented everything that we do, so that way if we either open a new location for ourselves or we license one off to somebody else, everything's consistent across the board. He's like, he said the same thing you did. He said, we spent so much time going back and like documenting or fixing problems that we could have had solved or not even have to worry about if we did all that in the beginning.
Yeah.
And then your other top tip about like bringing somebody else in for outside perspective, it's great to hire within, you know, because you know them, they do it exactly like you want, but they don't have that maybe experience of growing multiple units. If you've hired somebody from you know, dishwasher to counter to pizza maker to manager, whatever it is, like they don't have experience on growth. They have experience working in your restaurant. And that's it.
Yep.
So
yeah, exactly. And you know, we, for the longest time, you know, to make that, you know, to hire $100,000 position is terrifying as a small business. It really is, you know, but those people that have been through, you know, whatever their career has been and that have had that experience, they will double whatever they cost. You know, they will bring you in revenue wise way more than you will pay them. And that's one lesson I've learned too, is, you know, how can you afford $100,000 position? If you have a growth concept, how can you afford not to bring in $100,000 position when you have a growth concept? So that's one lesson I wish I would have learned a little bit easier too, or sooner rather, is, you know, people are absolutely worth their weight And they can get you a lot farther and a lot quicker.
Yeah, that's interesting. What does it look like for a day for you? Like, not like when you wake up in the morning, I have coffee, like, but like work wise, like do you, how often do you go to each restaurant? Like, what does it look like during the week?
Yeah. So what I kind of migrated to during COVID, and everybody started wearing slightly different hats. So I'll kind of go through where I am currently and then maybe what I was doing before. So we have a CEO in the company. He's my partner, Bryce. We also have a VP of ops. He's a new guy. We hired him actually like 2 weeks or a month before COVID struck. So he's gone through some shit, but he's still here.
Right into the fire.
Yeah, totally. So my position during COVID was, it was revenue driving. You know, I really took it on myself to go like, okay, these guys are keeping, you know, the business together. You know, this guy's keeping the shops together. I need to start driving revenue. So that's where the idea of High Horse Pizza came out. That's where the idea of, you know, introducing a wing program. There's a few other handful of other things that, you know, we've done that have just, you know, a new drink menu now. Currently we just opened up in a casino. So
oh, wow.
Those are just those revenue driving things that I've been doing. Previous to that though, I was really about culture, concept development, and just making sure that people were happy where they worked. And that's one thing that lately I think I've been really slacking on. So I really got to get back in the shops a lot more and start letting these revenue driver initiatives kind of stand on their own and, yep. and get back in the shops. Cause it's more important now than ever.
Yeah. It's hard to like, almost like, all right, like if, as we get through this and kind of getting back to normal, like, all right, kind of like, all right, we got through it. That's over. Hopefully that never happens again. But at least if it does, you kind of have some sort of plan in place to deal with it because you went through it. But now you can get back to, you know, nurturing the employees, building that culture so they can kind of take on that role for you.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
exactly.
Interesting. I hope we never have to go through anything like this again. This is usually like a once in 100 years, they say, right? I think we went through it in the 20s or something like this, some sort of pandemic in the 20s that was similar to this one. And here we are again, in the 20s of 2000s.
Yeah, I hope so, man, because, you know, I've always thought about the restaurant industry, like there are easier ways to make money out there.
Yeah.
But I chose this one and I love it. But this year has been a bitch.
Yeah, right.
And so I really hope this is a once in 100 year thing because, woof.
I was going to say, was this your hardest year in business? But that's the stupidest question ever because I'm sure it was.
Yeah, you know, it was the most challenging year. But, you know, I think the one thing we're all going to have, because those of us that are still here and, you know, in the beginning, you know, we had this thing, the weak and the tired won't make it. And we saw that happen, you know, kind of early on those first 6 months. You know, there is businesses that, you know, maybe they've been around for 10 years and they're kind of barely hanging on anyway. And this was their, you know, their reasoning to just hang up the towel. And that's okay. You know, I mean, 10 years in business is wonderful, right?
Yeah, it's a good career. So
there are businesses that, you know, held on, whether through government money or just, you know, because they had enough business through delivery. And then there are those who grew out of this, who did better, who are looking at this now that we're starting to, you know, either we're in the light at the end of the tunnel or we're damn closer than we have been, that, you know, we're a better company for having gone through this. And I think that's the hindsight that we're going to have in 6 months, a year, 5 years. And that's going to be the luxury of having that hindsight, is to look back at, you know, what happens when you are forced to go through hardship, when you're forced to innovate, when you're forced to make really shitty decisions that you didn't want to make, but you had to, you know, and maybe you wouldn't have made, you know, because they were hard and you were comfortable. But we're going to have a lot of hindsight. And I think it's going to be a really awesome place to be in this next amount of time.
How did you deal with the stress of this outside of work? Like, obviously it's a pretty stressful situation and like self-care is important. You want to make sure that you're not going crazy, or like you are able to deal with it because, you know, you have your family life and you don't want to bring those work problems home. Do you ever like check out and be like, you know what, I'm not doing work today?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that was the one nice thing about COVID too, is it brought the entire operation down to its most basic form. You know, I mean, we had, you know, pre-COVID, we had initiatives, we had all this stuff that we were doing, and we still had some of those initiatives, a lot of revenue driving things like I talked about. But it seemed like the operation was boiled down to its essence. And then we had a couple little drivers. So my workday got a little easier during COVID just because, you know, the shops were really on autopilot. And then we had a couple little projects that we were going just to keep more, you know, new revenue coming in. Yeah. So, you know, that's one thing that I think is carried over. In fact, that, you know, my work day, and I don't know if this is a good thing or not yet, but it's a lot more relaxed than it was. I mean, my calendar right now, I don't even almost check my calendar because there's nothing on it anymore. You know, like, I'm glad I got a reminder for this call an hour ago.
Right.
Like, oh shit. You know, I just got to this point where I wasn't even looking at my calendar because I purposefully had nothing on it. And I think, to your point, that's, you know, that's one of those things that I did. I never thought that we wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
So I was always confident that we would be here, but I just didn't know what we would look like. But I was confident that we would be here in some way, shape, or form. I knew this thing wouldn't kill us. So there was a little bit of confidence there. And I guess through that confidence that we're going to be here, this won't kill us, it's just hard. You know, I didn't let the stress get to me all that much because, you know, worst case scenario is we'll start something else at some point. You yeah. know, we have recipes. You know, if we have to shut the locations down and throw the keys to the landlord and, you know, worst case scenario, which we all had every one of us within my earshot had an oh shit scenario, you know, luckily I don't think many of us had to act on those, but you know, my thought was always like, all right, if I have to, it's not going to kill me.
Right.
It's just going to be hard.
Yeah. You know what? It's just business, right? Like health aside, you know, I feel bad for anybody who got COVID or had complications because of it. So take health out of the equation. If you're just dealing with business, like, what's the worst case scenario? Like you said, we got to close the shops, we file for bankruptcy or whatever it is, and you start over. Like if you can just wrap your head around that and just be like, that's the worst case scenario. And if that happens, I'm still alive, my family's still healthy, and we can still move forward. Like, okay, let's just keep moving forward.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the one comforting thing about it too was everybody was in the same situation.
Right. It wasn't like it was just happening to you.
It wasn't just us. It was every restaurant. It was every pizza shop. It was every landlord. It was every supplier that you were with. I mean, we can get into, you know, what suppliers were good partners during COVID and everything too. Like, everybody was in the same boat. Everybody was feeling it no matter what. So, you know, we all had this kind of rise and fall mentality that we were all in this together. And I know that's kind of been parroted quite a bit, but
yeah,
you know, I wasn't worried that we were the only ones that may not make it or that hopefully will make it. Like, everybody's in the same boat.
Right.
So.
Like, everybody had to close at some point or had the same restrictions across the board that you were dealing with.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Mikey, I know you're busy. I don't want to take up too much of your time, but where can people go say hello to you if they want to visit you in person or they want to check out you online or they have a follow-up question? Where should they go?
Yeah. I'm easy to get a hold of. If you look up, you know, Late Night Slice, you can always find us there. You know, my email is super easy too. Mikey, M-I-K-E-Y @latenightslice.com. We're always available. I love doing these chats and everything. And it's a muscle that I don't stretch hardly enough. So always happy to talk. And it's been really fun.
And if you're in the Columbus area, I highly recommend you stop into one of Mikey's shops because you will definitely get some enjoyment out of seeing what they have for decor and how they kind of, the experience you get when you do visit one of his shops. It's unique and fun for sure.
Yeah. I mean, do a Google image search.
Yes.
On our shops, and there brings up, you know, the shop in Cincinnati, the one across from the convention center. And by the way, the North America Pizza and Ice Cream Show, which is NAPIX. Is that
what
it was? They changed it. Mid-America Restaurant Expo. That's in Columbus every January. It'll probably be coming back next year. But that's a huge pizza and ice cream show. And I know some of you have been to that. That's where we met actually.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, that's always a good excuse to come to Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah. Because you're right across the street from the convention center.
Directly across the street.
That's the one I visited. So yeah, it's fun. Definitely go check that out. Mikey, don't hang up yet, but thank you so much. I'm gonna hit the stop button on the recording. I appreciate you joining me, my man.
Yep. Thanks a lot.
Thank you all for tuning into the podcast. Mikey, thank you so much for joining me on the show again. Let me know if you're going to the Pizza Expo at Smart Pizza Marketing on Instagram, at D. Bruce Irving on Instagram as well. SmartPizzaMarketing.com is the home base where you can find all the show notes for this episode of the podcast. And if you would give me a review on iTunes, that would be amazing. If you're enjoying the podcast, if you've gotten anything out of it, you've learned something that you've implemented in your business, leave me a review on iTunes. Very much appreciated on my end. All right. Thank you all for tuning in. Appreciate you all. We'll see you next time.